Listeners are advised Judge Gloria in this episode is a voice actor and not a real judge. This is not a real court and none of those mentioned are on trial. The scope and purpose of this episode is to create a more immersive listening experience through the events retold from the newspaper archives.
AIDS brings a response from the government.
AIDS, the disease which claims lives.
Welcome to AIDS of Lost Voices with me, William Hampson, and my co-host, Judge Gloria.
Mr. Hampson, please approach the bench.
Is it relevant to the matter at hand?
Did the accused put forward
in
a
this
defense?
Series, we re-examine HIV and AIDS-related crimes from the newspaper archives of the 80s, 90s, and noughties.
Court, rise!
Please be seated. Mr. Hampson, please step up to the podcast microphone. It is my understanding we are here today to hear various accounts from the newspaper archives relating to the HIV-AIDS pandemic.
That's right, my lord, because there was so much fear and ignorance around HIV and AIDS that naturally it wasn't going to be too long before those criminally minded were going to use HIV and AIDS as a weapon. And in this episode, we're going to be looking at several cases involving spitting and sticking, in which some newspapers refer to these individuals as the AIDS bandits.
I see from the file before me a newspaper article that you intend to rely on in your presentation of this case today.
Yes, because this first case, my lord, first appeared in various local newspapers on the 31st of March 1988. Now, they all pretty much reported the same, such as the Scunthorpe Evening Telegraph, which ran the headline, AIDS Woman on Needle Stabbing Charge. And the article states, a Scunthorpe woman accused of stabbing a store detective with a hypodermic syringe which may have been infected with the AIDS virus to escape being arrested was today remanded in custody for 8 days following a brief appearance before Lincoln City magistrates. Helen Marie Walker, 22, of Farthing Avenue, Scunthorpe, is accused of attempting to cause grievous bodily harm with intent to Julie Peatment on March the 18th and stealing 18 videotapes worth £60 from the Woolworth store in Lincoln High Street on the same day. The attack on Mrs. Peatman is alleged to have happened after the store detective followed Miss Walker through the main pedestrian precinct in Lincoln and tried to detain her. Walker had been confirmed by police as HIV positive and now Miss Peatman has to wait up to 5 years to see if she has contracted the killer disease AIDS. And over 2 weeks later, newspapers report Helen is back in court but is again remanded in custody with no further insight as to why. And this was not the first time Helen had been in trouble, as 2 years before this shoplifting incident, the Scunthorpe Evening Mail on the 17th of May 1986 ran the headline, "Tried to get extra tablets." And the article states, 20-year-old Helen Marie Walker altered a friend's medical prescription to get extra tablets for herself, and yesterday her case was adjourned for social inquiry reports by the Scunthorpe magistrates. Miss Walker of Jackson Road, Scunthorpe, pleaded guilty to criminally attempting to obtain the tablets. The court heard that the tablets were prescribed for people who were on drugs and who were being taken off them. But Mr. Andrew Pascoe, defending, said that Miss Walker was not a drug user. Inspector Kenneth May said Miss Walker had taken the prescription to a chemist's shop on behalf of a friend. On the way, she had altered the dosage from 20 tablets to 120. But the inspector said the chemist had noticed that the figure 1 was written in a different colour of ink and the police were called in. Mr. Pascoe said that the court might require social inquiry reports and, if this was the case, he asked for the matter to be adjourned. Anyhow, my lord, back to the charge of sticking a security guard with what they termed a dirty needle, Helen Walker is back before the court to be sentenced. Many of the regional newspapers reported the sentencing, such as the Lincolnshire Echo, who ran the front page headline, AIDS attack, jail sentence wins praise, and the Scunthorpe Evening Telegraph, that also ran the story on their front page with the headline, Jail for Scunthorpe Addict Who Shattered Victim's World, AIDS Nightmare, where they report on the 12th of July 1988. Scunthorpe AIDS victim Helen Walker stabbed a store detective with a dirty hypodermic syringe, putting her at risk from the killer disease. The drug addict was trying to escape arrest, but today began a 4-year jail sentence imposed by Lincoln Crown Court. Walker had been HIV positive for the last 3 years as a result of becoming infected through injecting drugs, and her victim now faces an agonising wait to see if she too will contract the virus. Walker, who had earlier broken down sobbing in the dock, looked stunned as Judge Richard Hutchinson told her that he had to pass a sentence which would deter others from carrying out similar attacks. The judge said In violently resisting arrest, you callously exploited the horrible affliction that you have. Although I accept that you did not intend to give her AIDS, you acted with the grossest recklessness. One hopes that you have not infected her, but the risk is there. Walker, 22, of Farthing Avenue, Scunthorpe, pleaded guilty to wounding with intent to resist arrest, assault, and shoplifting. She also admitted being in breach of probation and of a conditional discharge, both imposed for previous shoplifting offences. In a hearing described by the prosecution as unique in British law, the judge allowed the case to go ahead without the victim's name being revealed to spare her any more distress. Since the attack, she has had two blood tests which have proved negative, but faces a third test in the spring, and even that will not be conclusive. One doctor has estimated her chance of becoming infected as 1 in 1,000. The victim, who married just before the attack, is now on tranquilizers after her whole world was shattered by the attack. She has received counselling, and prosecuting barrister Charles Wide said the uncertainty and fear created in her mind has been appalling. The symptoms she has shown indicated a severe depression and anxiety state. It is entirely due to this incident. It will be difficult to stress enough the effect on her enjoyment of life as a result of this matter. Mr. Wide said the attack was on March 18th when the woman store detective tried to arrest Walker in a car park in Lincoln, minutes after watching her steal 6 packs of videotapes from Woolworth's store. During the struggle, Walker took the syringe out of her pocket and shouted, "Do you want AIDS?" before stabbing the detective in the back of her left hand. The woman suffered a puncture wound which bled heavily and needed hospital treatment while Walker escaped. The same needle had been used by Walker just 4 hours earlier to inject herself with heroin and was described as dirty by the store detective. Police traced Walker to her home in Scunthorpe and she was arrested 4 days later. She said she had gone shoplifting to buy the heroin substitute drug methadone and told detectives, quote, "I hope she is worried. She wasn't worried about me. All she was worried about was getting me arrested. I was only thinking about getting away," end quote. John Bush, in mitigation, said that Walker had been addicted to heroin for 5 years and would go to any means to get cash for drugs. She had already suffered the anxiety of being diagnosed HIV positive, but a recent test showed she has not got the full-blown AIDS virus yet. He said she was sorry and hoped the store detective does not become infected.
Mr. Hampson, did the party concerned submit an appeal?
No, my lord, there was no appeal that I could find, although as I understand it, Helen would have served only half her sentence, further reduced by time already spent on remand. But we do hear from Helen again, where the Scunthorpe Evening Telegraph on the 20th of May 1992 ran the headline, "Stole from Stores," and the article states, "A 26-year-old Scunthorpe woman who went shoplifting was given a 4-month jail sentence suspended for 2 years by town magistrates. Helen Walker of Merlin Road pleaded guilty to stealing bacon and furniture polish from Star Discount and whiskey from Asda. William Thorpe, prosecuting, said Walker had told the police she intended to sell the whiskey to buy a birthday present for her boyfriend. Her solicitor, Andrew Pascoe, said she was already on probation and an immediate custodial sentence would not achieve anything. Then, my lord, just short of 3 years, Helen Walker appeared in the newspapers again, this time the Hull Daily Mail, sadly for the last time, as this was a series of obituaries from her family and friends, given Helen Walker had died at the age of 28 on the 21st of April 1995. Helen Marie Walker, on 21st of April, peacefully in Princess Royal Hospital, aged 28 years, much loved only daughter of Ted and Margaret, peace at last, Helen. God bless you, all our love, Mam and Dad. Funeral service at St. Catherine's Church, Leconfield, Thursday the 27th of April at 10 a.m, followed by cremation at 11 a.m. Donations may be left at the church for Harvey Ward, if so desired. And one obituary that appeared the following day amongst a series of obituaries in the Hull Daily Mail was one from Helen's work colleagues. That may suggest, given she didn't appear in the newspaper for any further petty crimes since 1992, that perhaps Helen was getting her life back on track. Where it reads, "Helen Walker, deepest sympathy to Mr. and Mrs. Walker on their sad loss of their much-loved daughter, Helen. Peace at last, Helen. No more suffering and free from pain. You will always be remembered by your work friends, Pat, Linda, Gwen, Davina, Tracy, and Tracy.
A sad and most interesting set of circumstances.
Yes, my lord, and Helen Walker's crime in using a syringe and weaponizing HIV and AIDS seems to be unique in the newspaper archives. Unique in that it was rare for someone like Helen, who was HIV positive, to weaponize their own illness. Unlike this next article, which appeared on the front page of the Westminster and Pimlico News on the 25th of November 1993, with the headline, Horror of AIDS Scare, with the strapline, Guard Stabbed with Druggie's Needle. And the article states, a security guard at a West End store was stabbed with a syringe by a thief who claimed he had used it and had AIDS. Trevor Gillibrand was attacked by 28-year-old Lee Fielding after trying to stop him stealing 18 rolls of camera film worth £93 from Boots the Chemist in Tottenham Court Road. The Old Bailey heard on Tuesday that drug addict Fielding shouted, I have AIDS, while piercing the uniformed security supervisor in the arm and hand with a hypodermic needle. Prosecuting lawyer Philip Gaisford said Fielding was eventually held down by five people before being arrested. He said, quote, after being challenged, he tried to escape through the doors of the shop, but was grabbed and there was a struggle. During the struggle, the guard saw he was cut badly and saw a syringe in his hands. The defendant was shouting he had AIDS. The guard was cut and bleeding heavily and the defendant was stabbing out at staff. Various people joined in and he was spitting and trying to bite them. This continued until the police arrived. He was restrained and handcuffed. End quote. The court heard Mr. Gillibrand tested negative for HIV after the attack on June the 19th this year and that Fielding did not have AIDS. Fielding admitted and was convicted of actual bodily harm and theft and denied but was convicted of a separate aggravated burglary. Judge Israel Finnestein heard Fielding of West End Lane, West Hampstead was a drug addict who became aggressive under the influence of crack cocaine. The judge ordered Fielding be assessed for 1 month at the Drug Rehabilitation Lay Community Centre in Oxfordshire before sentences passed. He said, the security guard seemed to me to have acted with considerable courage. People need to be deterred from thinking they can act with this behaviour. The public needs to be protected. Then, my lord, at the Old Bailey in London, Lee Fielding is finally sentenced, which was reported in the Kensington Post on the 6th of January 1994, where the article offers this additional insight. Defence, Alison Brooks, told the court that Fielding did not suffer from HIV. Fielding of Blackburn Road, West Hampstead, was jailed in 1988 for heroin trafficking. The court heard that he becomes a Jekyll and Hyde character when under the influence of drugs. Judge Israel Finnestein said Fielding was in desperate need of help for the safety of the society. He said, the sooner this defendant is brought to a state of freedom from his dangerous proclivity, the better for society as well as for him. Fielding admitted causing actual bodily harm to the guard. He was ordered to do 3 years probation and attend a drug rehabilitation centre. However, my lord, despite Lee Fielding's claim when wielding that syringe that day, he didn't have, as we heard, HIV nor AIDS, and I didn't find any subsequent crimes covered by the press. The security guard, however, Trevor Gillibrand, did appear in the Romford News on the 26th of October 2010, where the start of the article states, an inquest into the death of Trevor Gillibrand from Junction Road, Romford at Walthamstow Coroner's Court heard that he died on March the 10th at Romford Station when he was hit by the fast train at 3:45 p.m. And the article continues, although extremely sad in nature, that he'd been experiencing depression and mental health problems since the early 2000s. He was still working as a security guard. He felt like his colleagues were talking about him behind his back. He was engaging with medical services. He was on medication. He was very optimistic about pulling himself out of this. However, the inquest did rule that from journals that they'd found at his home that he had sadly taken his own life.
A sad set of circumstances.
Yes, my lord. And sadly, another threat of being stuck with a syringe with claims of a risk of HIV/AIDS transmission appeared in the Medway Standard, a Kent newspaper here in England, on the 23rd of June 1998, where they ran the headline, AIDS threat, addict gets jail for robberies, with the strapline, victims told to hand over valuables or risk being infected with syringe. And the article states, a maniac who threatened to inject rail passengers with AIDS-tainted blood if they didn't hand over their money has been jailed for 4 years. Jason Bale, 23, of no fixed address, was said to have struck terror first into David Rawlings, As trapped in a second-class compartment, he had the syringe held inches away from his face, Maidstone Crown Court was told. Mr. Rawlings handed over £50 and, as the train arrived in Gillingham, bail leapt off, leaving his victim in a state of shock, said Mr. John Camare, prosecuting. Later in the same day, again in the second-class compartment of a train travelling to Gillingham, he robbed Neville Sears and his girlfriend Jane Atkins, using the syringe as a threat, although this time not drawing blood. Mr. Camare, prosecuting, said that after engaging the couple in conversation, he began to talk about AIDS and prostitutes, saying that was not the only way to catch the disease. He then demanded money and threatened to stab them with the syringe if they tried to get off the train when he did. Mr. Sears handed over his wallet and Miss Atkins her bank switch card. Bales demanded to know the PIN number and later withdrew £250. I mean, I can't believe she'd give him the PIN number, because how would he know it was wrong? Oh. Bales, who admitted 3 counts of robbery and 1 of theft on the 1st of March this year, was jailed for a total of 4 years and told by Judge Suzanne Hamilton, "Travellers have every right to be protected from someone like you. You terrified these people." She commented on his bad record and remarked on, quote, "this relatively novel form of extracting money. What you did was appalling and terrifying," she said. Bail was said by Mr. Andrew Lewis, defending, to be a heroin addict with a £75 a day habit, which he said had been passed to him by his father. Quote, "when he was arrested at Gillingham Railway Station, he was carrying 2 fresh syringes and needles," he said. And my lord, Jason Bale, who wasn't HIV positive but, like many others, was able to weaponise the illness off the back of the fear, ignorance and stigma that wider society had themselves created around this virus. The sad thing for Jason Bale, despite his criminal past, was by November 2021, aged 46, and had seemingly turned his back on petty crime and been clean from substance abuse for 8 months, when tragedy hit. While walking along a pavement, he was struck by a van and died at the scene. Several men were arrested on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving. But these incidents with syringes was not isolated to just the UK, as this next case from Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, highlights. It was the San Francisco Examiner via the Associated Press who are one of the first to break this story with the headline, "AIDS Bandit Strikes with Bloody Syringe," where they reported, "a bandit armed with a blood-filled syringe declared he had AIDS and robbed a San Fernando Valley market. The cashier handed over $40 during the confrontation Monday at Orchard Pride Market in Northbridge and the robber fled. Then, my lord, the very next day on the 18th of March 1992, the Union newspaper in California, via the Associated Press, ran the headline, AIDS Needle Bandit Raid 7-Eleven Store, where, the article states, a 7-Eleven clerk ran out of the door when a bandit, flashing a blood-filled syringe, entered the San Fernando Valley store today, the latest in a string of similar heists, police said. The blonde-haired man, who declared the syringe contained his AIDS-tainted blood, was apparently the same robber who struck a Northridge market Monday. No one was hurt in either confrontation. There have been similar robberies in the area, including the theft of a car, but investigators wouldn't disclose details. Detectives said no one was certain the syringe contained AIDS-tainted blood. The latest theft occurred today at about 5 a.m. at the 7-Eleven store on Parthenia Street and Parthenia Avenue. Quote, "he walked in with this syringe and the clerk took one look at it and ran away," said Sergeant Mike Sontang. "The bandit couldn't get the cash register open, so he helped himself to cartons of cigarettes and left." On Monday, a man fitting the same description confronted a cashier at the Orchard Pride Market and demanded money. The clerk handed over $40 and the robber fled. He held up a syringe full of blood and stated, "I have AIDS. I don't want to hurt anybody. But would you be willing to take him on and make that decision? I don't think so," said Sergeant Bill Thomas. The same man confronted the owner of Northridge Cyclery Monday, about 30 minutes before the Orchard Pride robbery, but owner Bill Ledgerwood ran out of the store and the bandit left without taking anything, detectives said. And again, my lord, the next day on the 19th of March 1992, the North County Times of California, via the Associated Press, ran the headline, "AIDS Bandit Strikes Again in Los Angeles," where they report, A bandit, flashing a syringe he said was filled with AIDS-tainted blood, robbed a convenience store and a hot dog stand on Wednesday in the latest of a string of similar heists, police said. There were no injuries during at least six confrontations with the syringe-packing man this week in the San Fernando Valley, including Wednesday's dawn robbery at 7-Eleven and 11:30 a.m. hold-up at Flukey's. Quote, "He shows me a needle and said, 'I'm the AIDS person and I need a couple of bucks.' I told him to wait outside and I'd get him the money. He waited outside, I gave him $2 and he left," said Flukey's employee Stan Houston. Police detectives said no one was certain the syringe contained blood infected with acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Houston, the employee, said the man moved slowly and appeared, quote, "to be on something, high." Asked if he was afraid, Houston said, "I had a little tingle in my heart, that's all." About 6 hours earlier and five blocks away, a blonde-haired man declaring the syringe he held contained his AIDS-tainted blood challenged the clerk at a 7-Eleven. The clerk ran out of the store and wasn't hurt. Then, my lord, the very next day on the 20th of March 1992, we hear of a copycat on the loose and concerns from spokesmen from the Los Angeles AIDS Project and those representing the gay community, where the Los Angeles Times ran the headline, "Syringe Bandit, Copycat Suspect Staged Two More Holdups at Markets," and the article states, "He has struck a 7-Eleven, another Minute Mart, and Flukey's Hot Dogs. On Thursday, the tall blonde man, armed with a hypodermic syringe that he says contains AIDS-infected blood, robbed a produce store. And now, police say he has inspired a copycat." As Los Angeles police intensified efforts to identify and track down the suspect Thursday, and police in Hawthorne investigated a robber using the same technique, representatives of AIDS Project Los Angeles and the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Community Services Center expressed concern that the robber's exploitation of AIDS fears may trigger anger against innocent people. "So far, we haven't seen any backlash," said Anthony Sprave, a spokesman for AIDS Project Los Angeles. "That's what we're afraid of," he added. "I'm just waiting for it," said David Smith, a spokesman for the community center, which frequently receives anti-gay calls and letters. "We're all just sitting here hoping for this idiot to get caught," he added. To AIDS activists, the unorthodox thieves may be the most wanted men in Los Angeles. A quick resolution, they say, would minimize unwarranted fears and perhaps settle whether the robbers are what they claim to be, men with AIDS using their own blood as weapons. Police in the San Fernando Valley say they have increased patrols and distributed copies of a photograph from a videotape that shows the original bandit robbing a North Ridge 7-Eleven. Quote, "It would be difficult to find a patrolman today who doesn't have that photo in his car," Los Angeles Police spokesman Lieutenant John Duncan said. In the most recent of 8 incidents since Monday, all of which have occurred in the San Fernando Valley, the man entered Louise Produce on Thursday, threatened a clerk and got $60 from the cash register. As in most of his robberies, the mustached bandit showed an employee a syringe containing red fluid and said, quote, "I have AIDS. This syringe is full of my blood. Give me all your money," end quote. The frightened woman allowed the man to reach into the cash register, police said. Meanwhile, Hawthorne police reported Thursday that a robber who said he had AIDS showed a vial of red fluid at the Friendly Market on Yukon Avenue on Wednesday night. Police said the frightened clerk gave the man $20. Quote, "It seems unlikely it's the same person," Hawthorne Police Lieutenant Jan Ogden said. Quote, "Because of the media coverage, it would be easy to copycat this. Northridge is quite a distance from Hawthorne," he added. The second robber was described as a white male, about 30 years old, with shoulder-length brown hair. There was a video camera in the store, but it was turned off when the robbery occurred. Police said that despite the novel choice of weapons, the bandits are not particularly sophisticated. Quote, "People who rob convenience stores are usually more desperate and less sophisticated," said Detective Mel Arnold, a robbery investigator at the LAPD. "Most of our robbery murders that occur happen in convenience stores. Most of them know they're not going to get a whole lot of money, but they'll get it relatively quickly. The booty has been relatively modest. The Valley Bandit's biggest holdup was a car he stole from a frightened motorist by brandishing the needle. After that, his biggest scores were 8 cartons of cigarettes worth about $150 and the $60 in cash he took Thursday. He obtained nothing in several of the holdups. At Flukey's, he left after the owner gave him $2. Both police and AIDS activists expressed concerns about the media coverage given to the syringe-wielding bandit. Duncan suggested that media attention may have stymied investigators' attempts to arrest the thief Wednesday after detectives, acting on a tip, traced the stolen car to the 8700 block on Canby Avenue in North Ridge. They had hoped to capture the man when he returned to the car, Duncan said, but the stakeout was revealed by visits from reporters, some in conspicuous TV news vans. Smith, the spokesman for the Gay Community Centre, bemoaned reports that labelled the robber the AIDS bandit. Yesterday, it was a minute-by-minute bulletin on the radio. I just think he's trying to make a name for himself, whoever he is, Smith said. Then, my lord, the following day on the 21st of March 1992, the San Bernardino County Sun newspaper reports that police have stepped up the search with more squad cars. Then, on the 22nd of March 1992, the News and Record newspaper hears from the first victim and further concerns from the Los Angeles AIDS Project, where the newspaper ran the headline, Syringe Bandit Spreads Terror and Prejudice, where that article states, bicycle shop owner Bill Ledgerwood always worried about being held up at gunpoint, but he never dreamed he would be threatened at needlepoint. Ledgerwood was the first victim last week of the man whom Los Angeles police dubbed the Syringe Bandit after he threatened people 8 times with a needle he says is loaded with AIDS-infected blood. AIDS never really popped into my mind, being my age, said Ledgerwood, 67. But when he raised his syringe and said, I'm going to give you AIDS, I could see my retirement go out of the window. I could see my family become destitute, he added. Within the next 3 days, the bandit struck 7 more times and police say copycat robbers have pulled 2 heists in the Los Angeles area, city of Hawthorne and in Sacramento. No one was injured in the 10 attacks, but AIDS activists say the bandits have crippled their efforts to convince mainstream America that people with the AIDS virus should be helped and accepted, not feared. This is the kind of case that fans prejudice and discrimination and reinforces the public's view of people with AIDS as recalcitrant or dangerous, said Lawrence Gostin, executive director of the American Society of Law and Medicine and a Harvard University professor. In that sense, people infected by the human immunodeficiency virus, which causes AIDS, also are victims of the syringe bandit, activists said. People with HIV are not criminals, said Mario Solis Maric, director of public policy for AIDS Project Los Angeles. This particular person is damaging and hurting all people with AIDS and all people with HIV, he added. Police say it was just a matter of time before criminals exploited the 10-year-old AIDS epidemic by trying to brandish it as a lethal weapon. Doctors say the AIDS virus cannot be transmitted through skin-to-skin contact. The only way someone can be infected is if the virus enters the body through an opening in the skin or a splash in the eye or through sexual contact. Doctors said the risk of contracting AIDS from the syringe bandit's needle is relatively minuscule. It would be difficult for the bandit to spray blood from the syringe because blood coagulates within minutes. Then, my lord, the Napa Valley Register newspaper on the 24th of March 1992 ran the headline, AIDS Blood Bandit Lying Low, where they report, a bandit who brandished a syringe he claimed was filled with AIDS-tainted blood remains at large despite several reported sightings, police said. Numerous callers gave police tips on the man's possible whereabouts over the weekend, but none resulted in an arrest, said Lieutenant John Duncan. The bandit is blamed for 9 confrontations in a 2 square mile of Northridge, 20 miles northwest of downtown Los Angeles. But, my lord, the very next day, on the 25th of March 1992, the Los Angeles Times ran their headline, Police Hold Man as Syringe Bandit Suspect, where they report, a convicted robber with a history of drug use, in custody for violation of parole, was identified Tuesday as the so-called syringe bandit who threatened robbery victims in the San Fernando Valley with a hypodermic needle that he claimed contained AIDS-infected blood, police said. At least 4 witnesses at the lineup at the Los Angeles County Central Jail on Tuesday positively identified Wesley Pledger, 35, of Northridge, as the man who terrorized store clerks by threatening them with the syringe, investigators said. Police said they would ask the district attorney's office today to charge Pledger in the series of 8 holdups that occurred last week in Northridge and Canoga Park. Pledger lived in the area where the robberies took place, said Lieutenant John Duncan, a department spokesman. His arrest came after officers from the Devonshire Division showed still photos taken from store video cameras to neighbourhood and business watch groups, Duncan said. At a business watch meeting on Saturday, a member of the group said he recognised Pledger from the photos, Duncan said. He said he had just fired Pledger. Police then determined that Pledger was on parole. They contacted his parole officer to learn his whereabouts and took him into custody. Duncan added that several witnesses shown the inmate's photograph before the lineup were unable to confirm or eliminate him as the suspected syringe bandit. The lineup, attended by 6 to 9 witnesses, was then held to see if positive identification could be made, Duncan said. No one was injured during the confrontations at convenience stores and other small businesses, but the feast's unusual weapon seemed to capture the city's imagination and draw on fears of contracting the deadly AIDS virus through a brief jab or by being squirted in the eye, which AIDS authorities said would be highly unlikely. Pledger was on parole for robbery and has a history of drug use, Duncan said. He was arrested in the northern San Fernando Valley, where most of the syringe robberies occurred, and fits the syringe thief's general description. In almost every robbery last week, the tall, blonde, moustached thief approached his victims armed with a needle and told them he had AIDS and, quote, "this syringe contains my blood," end quote. Some victims told police he tried to jab them. Others reported that he simply implied he could infect them if they failed to comply with his demand for money. The highly publicised crimes inspired at least one apparent copycat who robbed a Hawthorne store of $20 last Thursday after displaying a vial filled with red fluid. The Valley's so-called syringe bandit obtained a car, 8 cartons of cigarettes worth about $150 and $62 in cash in his robberies, police said. After a week of robberies, sometimes several in one day, the thief dropped out of sight on Friday, a day before Pledger was taken into custody for violation of parole. And, my lord, a few days later, on the 28th of March 1992, the San Bernardino County Sun newspaper ran the headline, "AIDS Bandit Goes to Court," where we hear the following plot twist. A paroled robber pleaded innocent Friday to charges he menaced San Fernando Valley merchants by brandishing a syringe he claimed was loaded with his AIDS-infected blood. Wesley Pledger, 35, who was arrested Saturday, pleaded innocent to 6 counts of armed robbery, 2 counts of attempted armed robbery, and 2 counts of assault with a deadly weapon. Bail was set at $120,000 and he was ordered to return April 27 for a pre-trial hearing. And a month later, the Fenzo Bean newspaper reports that Wesley Pledger is ordered to stand trial with a Superior Court hearing scheduled for the 11th of May 1992. However, the hearing actually takes place on the 14th of August 1992, and the press interest, as you can imagine, is immense. The reporting stretched across every state from the West Coast to the East Coast of the United States of America. But if we stay in California, the headline, which appeared in the California newspaper, "Man Pleads Guilty in AIDS Syringe Store Robberies," goes on to report, "A man pleaded guilty Thursday to committing convenience store robberies in which clerks were threatened with a syringe they were told held AIDS-tainted blood. Wesley Glenn Pledger, 35, of Northridge, was sentenced to more than 15 years in jail after entering the plea to robbery and assault charges at a pre-trial hearing. The robberies in the San Fernando Valley were committed between March the 16th and March the 19th and netted the bandits cigarettes, soft drinks and small amounts of cash," police said. Pledger, on parole for robbery, had 3 previous felony convictions. He pleaded guilty Thursday to 4 counts of robbery and 1 count each of attempted robbery and assault with a deadly weapon. He faced an 11-year term, but his felony record led Judge Michael Lurrows to hand down a stiffer sentence of 15 years and 8 months in prison. Pledger must serve 7 years before he will be eligible for parole. Defense attorney Tom Tebow said outside court the harshest sentence was unjustified because no one was injured in the robberies. "It was unknown if the syringes used in the robberies contained the AIDS virus," said Deputy District Attorney Sarah Boyajian. She said the law doesn't contain provisions for testing in such cases. Quote, "The point wasn't whether it really had AIDS-contaminated blood or not. The point was the syringe, in and of itself, was a deadly weapon." Pledger was arrested March the 21st for investigation of parole violation after officers searched his car and allegedly found a pipe used for smoking cocaine. Photos taken by a security camera at one store were used to identify him, said Police Lieutenant John Duncan. Pledger was paroled from prison in June after serving time for three robberies committed in 1987, said Regional Parole Administrator Jerry DiMaggio. He also served time in jail for a drug arrest. Oh, jeez, and my lord, as you can imagine, this story rumbles on for days, and in 1993, the following year, Wesley's conviction is mentioned when another individual takes up the same method of robbing stores with a syringe claimed to contain HIV/AIDS-infected blood. And in other reports at the time, it was stated that the prosecution did debate whether or not to have Wesley Pledger tested for the HIV virus and possibly to see if that had developed into AIDS, but they decided not to because they felt, as we heard, that it didn't matter whether the needle was HIV or AIDS contaminated or not, it was still, in their eyes, a lethal weapon. So it was never established whether Wesley was living with HIV or not, or whether he just spotted a golden opportunity given the fear, the ignorance and the stigma around the disease to be able to commit these crimes.
Mr. Hampson, did the party concerned submit an appeal?
Well, my lord, I did attempt to look, but I am not entirely au fait with locating such records within the United States of America, but there was never any mention of an appeal in the press, nor any indication as to Wesley's eventual release, either through press reports such as him perhaps taking up similar offences upon his release. However, with the age of social media, I did find Wesley Pledger online as recently as 2021. Sadly, it does appear, as we experience here in the UK when people serve long prison sentences, that he is perhaps homeless, living in a tent within the San Diego, California area, and his friends listed perhaps more a support network of meals and soup kitchens and drop-in centres, etc. Despite his housing situation, he does appear, through the support of others, to be taking good care of himself, as well as can be expected. He still sports a moustache and is otherwise clean-shaven. He looks relatively healthy and well turned out considering his situation. Despite his criminal past, what makes this story all the more sad is what I stumbled across in the newspaper archives before his offending, the potential he once had and the life he might have otherwise led. Because, in a local newspaper local to Russellville, Kentucky, on the 16th of September 1976, a very handsome and dapper-looking 18-year-old Wesley Pledger is photographed in his United States Navy uniform where, the article states, on Italian duty, Wesley Glenn Pledger is serving a tour of duty on Sardinia Island, Rome, Italy. He is the grandson of Mrs. Raymond H. Page of Russellville. He is a 1975 graduate of a high school at Sherman Oaks, California, and entered the Navy in May 1976. He completed his basic training in August with the second highest rating in his class and is stationed in the radar section.
A sad and most interesting set of circumstances. Mr. Hampson, I believe you have another series of articles you wish to bring before the listeners?
That's right, my lord, because this was an equally stigmatising act that came off the legacy of the ignorance and fear around HIV/AIDS and how it was transmissible. And in this next case that we're about to look at, while wrong, had a sombre premonition to it. Because in Scotland's The Journal newspaper on the 10th of March 1987, they ran the headline, AIDS guitarist spat blood at policeman, and the article states, the heroin-addicted brother of a former member of the Bay City Rollers was jailed for 2 years yesterday for spitting blood at two police officers and threatening to kill them by infecting them with AIDS. When he made the threats, Daniel McGlynn, 30, did not know he had AIDS. The irony was that, while in custody, a blood sample was taken and this later showed he had the virus, Mr. Neil Murray, defending, said in the High Court, Edinburgh. When detained in connection with another offence, he was injured during a struggle. He then spat mouthfuls of blood and shouted at the police, I have AIDS. I am going to kill you. I am going to give you AIDS. McGlynn of Magdalen Gardens, Edinburgh, pleaded guilty to assaulting two police officers at Leith Police Station by threatening to infect them with AIDS and spitting blood at them and on one of them. McGlynn also admitted possessing heroin, which he swallowed after a struggle with police officers. Passing sentence, Lord Mayfield said, I realise that the chances of infection are not high as far as is known at the moment, but it was a particularly nasty and vicious threat. McGlynn was lead guitarist with the Pat McGlynn Band and made tours of Europe and Japan in the 1970s. He also appeared with the Bay City Rollers, of which his brother Pat was a member. And, my lord, the very same story featured on page 4 of the national tabloid The Daily Mirror, where in their sister newspaper in Scotland, The Daily Record, they gave us this additional insight. Neil Murray, defending, said that McGlynn had gone to London at an early age and become involved in a subculture of drugs. He could not kick the habit. When he threatened that he would infect police with AIDS, he did not know he had the virus. The terrible irony was that while in custody, a blood sample was taken, and this later showed he had the virus, said Mr. Murray.
Mr. Hampson, did the party concerned submit an appeal?
I couldn't find any appeal, my lord, and there were no reports of one in the press, but that doesn't mean there wasn't one, just I couldn't find it through my resources. But what did appear after his sentencing, given the tabloids are never ones to over-sensationalise an AIDS-related story, especially with Daniel McGlynn having pop star connections, was the Daily Record 5 days later, on the 15th of March 1987, spoke with the policeman concerned. Under the banner Special Report, they ran the headline quote of the policeman, "He spat at me, saying he had AIDS. I trembled." And the short report states, "Fear is the constant companion of police on duty in increasingly violent Britain, and they now face a new menace, AIDS. Constable Willie Stevenson was faced with that fear after arresting a heroin addict. The man spat at him and the saliva landed on his shoulder and arm. Recalling the night he and another officer arrested pop guitarist Dan McGlynn in Edinburgh, he says, quote, "It was the most frightening moment of my life. I knew McGlynn was an addict, and when he shouted he was going to kill me with AIDS, I started to shake. When his blooded saliva splatted on me, I became so scared. I was taken to hospital and given an injection. 4 days later, I was told McGlynn had been found to have AIDS antibodies." End quote. Then, my lord, sadly 8 years to the month, 39-year-old Daniel McGlynn passed away on the 28th of March 1996 in the city of Edinburgh. He went on to be laid to rest at the Mount Vernon Cemetery, Edinburgh.
A sad and most interesting set of circumstances.
Indeed, my lord. And finally, my lord, this next case, which first hit the newspapers on the 5th of February 1986, like that of the Daily Record in Scotland, which ran the front page headline, "Dying mum's baby has AIDS," with the strapline, "Tragic plea to sheriff," where the article states, "A young mother is dying from the killer disease AIDS, and her baby daughter has the virus. Rachel Townsley has only 6 months to live, a court heard yesterday. And 6-week-old Michelle has a 1 in 10 risk of dying too." The horrifying story was told at Edinburgh Sheriff Court, where Townsley, 24, admitted stealing a purse containing £85 from an American tourist in Princes Street. Defence agent Brian Gilfeder outlined the tragic case to Sheriff Ronald Ireland QC, but last night Townsley was in jail pending medical reports and little Michelle was being looked after by a relative. After the case, Mr. Gilfeder said, "Rachel Townsley and her baby were both diagnosed as AIDS carriers shortly after Michelle was born. Later it was confirmed that the mother had the disease and she will probably die within 6 months. If she has to go through a prison sentence, the baby will have to be taken into care. At present, she attends the city hospital every 2 weeks for tests, and the baby may have to have blood transfusions," he said. A friend of the family said, "The whole thing is such a great tragedy, so awful. Sheriff Ireland will receive a medical report on the case in a fortnight's time. Townsley, who has 2 other children, is separated from her husband and is living with a friend in the city's Leaf Walk." Then, my lord, the next day on the 6th of February 1986, the very same newspaper, The Daily Record, ran the headline, "Heartbreak Plea by Jailed AIDS Mother," where they report, "A young mother dying from the killer disease AIDS has made a dramatic plea, quote, 'Let me look after my baby in prison.' And last night Rachel Townley's prayer was nearer being answered. Arrangements were being made to take 6-week-old Michelle to Courton Vale, where her mother is being held. As the Record exclusively revealed yesterday, Rachel, 24, is believed to have only 6 months to live, and her tragic baby, who has an AIDS-associated virus, has a 1 in 10 chance of dying too. Behind the move to have mother and daughter reunited is Rachel's brother, Ronald Smith, 26. Quote, "Michelle was born 6 weeks premature and needs her mother's love for as long as it's available. My mum and I don't have the facilities to look after a baby. Our flat's too small for a start. And if Rachel is going to die, I believe she should have the baby with her for what time she has, he said last night. He said he planned to ask social workers to drive him and the baby to Calton Vale to see whether the authorities would allow the sad reunion. As he spoke, tiny Michelle, warmly wrapped in pink rompers, sat sucking a feed bottle on the knee of her granny, Mrs. Annie Smith, in her home in Buchanan Street, Leith. Quote, "She's had tests and we hope against hope that she will be all right and not get AIDS," said Mrs. Smith. "The whole business is tragic," she added. The story of mother and child was told at Edinburgh Sheriff Court on Monday when Townsley admitted stealing a purse containing £85 from an American tourist in Princes Street. Her solicitor, Mr. Brian Gilfeder, outlined the tragic case to Sheriff Ronald Ireland, who then ordered Townsley to be held in custody pending medical reports. Then, my lord, in a bizarre and slight plot twist, the Daily Record then ran the following headline on the 19th of February 1986. Lies of mother in AIDS scare, where they reported a mum who told a sheriff she had the killer disease AIDS was lying. Quote, "I lied to be with my baby," said Rachel Townsley last night. She had claimed she was a victim of AIDS, had only 6 months to live, and that her six-week-old baby, Michelle, had an AIDS-associated virus. The 24-year-old mother was sent to a women's prison for medical reports and made an impassioned plea to have her baby brought to her behind bars. But when she appeared at Edinburgh Sheriff Court yesterday to be sentenced on two purse theft charges, her lawyer said she did not have AIDS. However, she does have the telltale virus, which means she has a 1 in 10 chance of getting the disease. Her baby, said lawyer Brian Gilfeder, had been given a clean bill of health. Sheriff Roger Craik said he was prepared to give Townsley of Buchanan Street, Leith, a chance and deferred sentence for a year. My lord, given it's 1986, I don't think here that Rachel Townsley is essentially lying or has lied. I think it's a case of the belief, the scientific and medical belief, that she's tested positive for what they termed then HIV or AIDS antibodies. But there was this scientific and medical belief that not everybody would go on to develop AIDS. However, we know today that if you test for antibodies, you are guaranteed to develop AIDS if it's left untreated. So I don't think she's necessarily lying. She hasn't developed AIDS, but she has tested positive for antibodies, which would today mean that she's got HIV. And with the Daily Record stating any sentence in this case was to be deferred for 1 year, the stealing of the American tourist purse, you'd think Rachel Townsley would lay low and get on with life as quietly as possible. Well, not quite. As 8 days after the article was published, on the 27th of February 1986, Rachel Townsley is caught yet again stealing a purse, where the Daily Telegraph on the 15th of March 1986 eventually tell us what went on and what she is charged with, under the headline, AIDS Carrier on Spitting Charge, and the article states, a woman accused of spitting on a store employee, knowing she was a carrier of the AIDS and hepatitis B viruses, was remanded in custody yesterday for trial in Edinburgh on March the 24th. When Rachel Townsley, 24, first appeared at Edinburgh Sheriff Court on March the 7th, her solicitor claimed the charge was not relevant. But Mr. Brian Gilfeder told Sheriff William Hook yesterday that he was withdrawing his challenge. Townsley of Buchanan Street, Edinburgh, has denied a charge that, knowing she was a carrier of the AIDS and hepatitis B viruses, and that such conditions are transmitted by body fluids, she recklessly spat on Michael McConachie, an employee of Goldberg's on High Riggs, Edinburgh, to his danger on February the 27th. Then, my lord, the trial gets underway on the 24th of March 1986, and the Liverpool Echo report on the testimony of the Star Detective, who Rachel Townsley had allegedly spat at, where, under the headline, AIDS victim spat at me, the article states, a Star Detective told court today that a woman who claimed to have AIDS spat in his face after he detained her for stealing a purse. Michael McConachie, 30, was giving evidence at Edinburgh Sheriff Court at the trial of Rachel Townsley, 24, of Buchanan Street, Edinburgh. She had pleaded not guilty to, quote, recklessly spitting on the Star Detective, knowing she was a carrier of both AIDS and hepatitis B viruses, and knowing that they were transferred by body fluids, end quote. Mr. McConachie said that he was on duty on February the 27th this year at Goldberg's store at High Riggs, Edinburgh. Someone stole a purse and, as a result, two men and a woman were taken into the store's security office for questioning. He said he took the three people's names and addresses. One of the men told him he was going to be sick, and the girl said she was suffering from AIDS. He told the court, quote, "First of all, it was one of the men who said, quote, 'They won't lock us up because we have AIDS, and the police won't take us away,'" end quote. Mr. McConaughey added, "We get a lot of criminals saying this." The trial continues. And, my lord, the following day, the Daily Post gives us a little more insight into the store detective's testimony, where they share. Mr. McConaughey added, quote, "We get a lot of criminals say this. I thought it was just a threat," end quote. But he said Miss Townsley stood up and asked for a drink of water. Quote, "She picked up a waste paper bucket. She was shouting and swearing and then brought up phlegm from her throat and spat at me," end quote. The spittle landed on his cheek. Oh, dirty bitch. Mr. McConaughey said he was told by doctors that the likelihood of the AIDS virus being transmitted by spit was, quote, "very remote," end quote. The chances of contracting the virus by being spat on were 1,000,000 to 1, AIDS expert Dr. Raymond Brettel told the court. He said that research in the USA had shown that only 1 out of 83 people with the AIDS virus had it in his saliva. For people in high-risk categories, homosexuals, haemophiliacs, and drug addicts, there was a 1 in 10 chance that the virus would develop into the disease, he added. Miss Townsley wept as Dr. Graham Walker, senior medical officer of Courtenay Vale Women's Prison, disclosed that her child developed the AIDS virus at 4 weeks. He said Miss Townsley had been a heroin addict since 1979. The trial continues.
Mr. Hampson, how did they rule in this matter?
Well, my lord, as the trial comes to an end, we hear the outcome in the Daily Post on the 28th of March 1986, where the article states, "A young mother with the AIDS virus was acquitted of spitting in the face of a store detective. Heroin addict Rachel Townsley, 24, was found not guilty of recklessly spitting in a store detective's face to his danger. Knowing that she was an AIDS carrier and that such a condition was transmitted by body fluids. Sheriff William Hook accepted a defence objection that a previous conviction had been disclosed during the trial, contrary to the Criminal Procedure Scotland Act 1975, and acquitted Townsley on the spitting charge, but sentenced her to 6 months in jail for stealing a purse and for other theft charges. Oh, my lord. Despite the tabloids claiming that Rachel Townsley and her baby Michelle Townsley were only weeks away from death due to AIDS, I was unable to find any death record in Scotland, nor England and Wales for either of the women. In fact, I did learn that 3 years after this incident, Rachel Townsley was very much still alive, given she divorced her husband in the courts in 1989. And with no statutory records between then and now, surely this indicates that they are both still very much alive and hopefully, considering what we've heard, hopefully well. And that, my lord, not only concludes this episode, but this entire crime series.
Mr. Hampson presented a series of poignant cases today, illustrating the complex interplay between victimhood and culpability. While it is crucial to acknowledge the moral and legal violations that have occurred, we must also consider the profound impact of an HIV or AIDS diagnosis. Such a condition, undeniably cruel in its nature, cannot serve as a justification for criminal actions. However, it undoubtedly shapes the narrative surrounding each individual. Each case serves as a stark reminder that beneath the offences, there existed a life, one that preceded the incidents we have just heard. And for many, these lives are now but memories, tragically cut short. In reflecting on these stories, we are compelled to recognize the humanity of those involved and the heavy burdens they carried, reinforcing the importance of empathy in our discussions of justice and morality. This podcast is adjourned until next week.
Court rise!
You can check out and read all the newspaper articles mentioned in this episode, along with extra snippets of information, on the Extra Tea blog. You can find the link in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, then don't forget to like, share and subscribe. Until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at The Lost Boys of Soho.